The Athletic.
Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, well, Champions League, obvs, Man City's sporting chance, Real Madrid in Paris, Liverpool's plans to spend Wednesday evening on the internet. Plus, Borkum, murder one, why Pippo cannot be sacked, the best title race in Europe, and at least two goals of the season. It's all coming up in this Totally Football Show, European edition, in association with Paddy Power. Tuesday, 15th of February, listener, and thank goodness you're with us, because there's a bit of a skeleton crew on this Totally. We've got James Horncastle.
Hey, James.
We've got Alvaro Romeo.
Hello, James.
Hello, Alvaro. And that's it. No, but on the way, we've got Christoph Biermann on that big, big Bundesliga story. And from his actual holiday, Julien Laurent should be joining us too. He couldn't not make his presence felt in a week as important as this. We've got Champions League coming back. Of course, PSG Real is a massive fixture on the Tuesday. There's also Europa League on the Thursday. Loads of other stories to talk about. What game are you most looking forward to midweek, Alvaro?
Well, I'm not going to be too innovative here. PSG Real Madrid.
Yes,
the best game by far. And there are so many storylines as well. Mbappé, for example, who is set to become a Real Madrid player soon, right? So
Maybe he is.
Maybe, who knows, but it's looking like.
Right, okay. James, something beyond PSG Real Madrid for you?
Well, it has to be San Siro, Liverpool against Inter. No, Liverpool had a very good time on their last visit. But I think for Inter, this is probably the biggest Champions League game that they've played since the treble. Because if you think about it, yeah, they had a couple of good games under Conte pre-COVID, Barcelona, Dortmund, particularly the Dortmund one at home. But aside from that, you know, even on their Europa League run all the way to the final, that was either played behind closed doors or in Germany. So this feels like it's as big as it's got for Inter. I mean, it's of course their first knockout game in this competition in more than a decade. It feels like it's as big as it's got since that first leg against Barcelona in the semi-final in 2010.
Mm. All right, well, we'll talk about what chances they have of not getting knocked out in the next two games a little bit later on. But first off, of course, it's moments of the weekend with Paddy Power, only two of them. So let's make them biggies. Alvaro, what you got?
My moment of the week is Atletico de Madrid winning pretty much in the last minute of the game.
Preparado Rodrigo de Paul, la templa de Paul, segundo palo hermoso, gol del Atlético de Madrid.
Vamos!
It was very difficult for them against Getafe because in the first half they conceded three goals, they scored three as well, but if you tell Simeone you are going to concede three goals against Getafe in the first half of a game, probably he will start choking. Agonizing, but this time Atletico de Madrid managed to come back in the second half in a heroic way, I would say, because they did it with 10 men. Felipe was sent off for a horrific challenge, and it looked like Getafe could have the upper hand, but Mario Hermoso, the guy who suffered a lot against Adama Traoré a week now, he managed to score a beautiful goal with a volley, and Atletico is now leveled on points with Barcelona, fifth on the table.
Crikey. They've also already conceded more goals this season in La Liga than they have in any of Diego Simeone's previous nine full seasons in charge. Wow. Anyway, James, your moment of the week stroke weekend.
I think it has to be goal of the season contender in the Atalanta-Juventus game that we had on Golazzo on Sunday night on BT Sport. That Ruslan Malinovsky goal from, 35? Felt like 40 yards.
Di Malinovsky, la barriera dei giocatori della Juventus, il tocco, la conclusione, gol! Strepitoso gol di Malinovsky, un sinistro che buca Szczesny.
Back heel layoff from Remon Froiler, and he just hits it as he so often does. Only Messi scored more goals from outside the box than Malinovsky in the last 3.5 years, and nothing that Szczesny could do about it. It was a goal good enough to win the game, but they drew the game, James.
They drew. An absolute crucial encounter potentially for who's going to be playing Champions League football out of Serie A next season. That is a subject we will be addressing later on, but we're going to begin with the Champions League last 16.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend, brought to you by Paddy Power. If one leg of your 4+-fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet on all football leagues and all markets. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1 to 5 per leg, online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply, 18+, begambleaware.org.
All right, the sweet sounds of the Champions League theme heralding the return of the great continental competition this week. Tuesday, Paris Saint-Germain against Real Madrid, and also Sporting against Man City. Wednesday then, RB Salzburg take on Bayern Munich, and it's Inter Liverpool. Joining us now on the line from atop a mountain resort, Julien Laurens. Jules, bonjour.
Hi, James. Hi, everyone.
So good to have you with us. Oh, we missed you on Moment of the Weekend. Would you care to give us one before we get cracking on the PSG Real Madrid?
Yeah, I think I would pick the Lyon victory against Nice, because that was a big game for them in the for the table and their position. It was big for Peter Bosch, who, as we know, has been struggling. And what that showed is that they're capable, so capable, those Lyonnais, capable of great games. And we saw against Marseille as well that they beat, 10 days before, how good they could be. And again against Nice, who were second in the table, doing really well. Maybe the key, Jimbo, was that Jerome Boateng was dropped for the game, not even on the bench. Completely dropped Boateng, the 2014 World Cup winner, because he's had one too many, let's say, argument with Peter Bosch, argued with some of the players because he didn't think some were disciplined enough, and there was a lot of arriving late at training, for example, or he didn't really like the attitude. And I think tactically as well with Peter Bosch, they didn't really get on. So for that reason, moaning too much, he was dropped. And look, without him, they certainly did better than the last game with him. So maybe it was the right call.
All right. And you're pretty happy with it, because it's extended PSG's lead at the top of Ligue 1. PSG now, what is it, 16 points clear? Crikey.
Yeah.
But the league at this point is a bit of an afterthought. Coming up Tuesday and then the return match in Madrid are the two matches which are going to pretty much define Paris Saint-Germain and Pochettino's season. What happens if this goes wrong, Jules?
Well, Jimbo, if this goes wrong, I still think he will finish the season and see out the season, and they will win the league and title, but that would be it, because as we know, they're already out of the French Cup as well. It would be pretty boring. It would already be on who's coming next, because there would be no way Poch would stay for the last year of his contract, so the 2022-2023 season. I think it would put him off of even trying to finish the season. He might just want to say, like, you know what, this is pointless now, because he's going to get destroyed. I mean, again, it depends how they lose it. If it's really tight.
Well, I mean, I was wrong for me to have even said that. They haven't lost it yet, and they might not lose it, Jules. What's your feeling about PSG? The weekend saw them with a kind of classic Paris Saint-Germain performance, in that it looked like they were going to drop points until time added on, and then Kylian Mbappé sorted things out.
Messi qui va revenir dans l'axe, qui va décaler Kylian Mbappé. Le contrôle de Mbappé. La frappe roulée. Oh là 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 là! Quel but! Quel but de la part de Kylian Mbappé!
I mean, if you take Kylian out of this team, there's nothing left. There is nothing. This is his team, but not just this team, as in he's the boss, which he is. More than Messi, Neymar, Marquinhos, Verratti, whoever you want. This is his team, in the sense that if he's not there, nothing happens. If he's not there, they don't score or they don't create anything, pretty much. If he's not there, I think it's pretty comfortable for the opposition to defend against them. If you look at Messi, as great as he is, he's still the Messi that, you know, doesn't run much, he's not very aggressive, doesn't really have now the impact over the first 5 to 10 yards than he used to in terms of dribbling, for example. So at times, it's okay to defend against Messi. With Kylian, it's not. Mm. So if you take him out of this team, there's nothing left. That's what worries me the most, because if you're Real Madrid right now, or if you're anybody else, but it's harder for example, if you're Rennes or if you're a Ligue 1 team, if it's Real Madrid, it's easier if you want to keep Mbappe quiet. Then you know that you can put, I don't know, let's say Militao on him the whole time, as well as backing up with Carvajal and backing up with Casemiro, for example. Even if they have to be 3v1, and then Kylian is going to be quiet, and I'm not sure PSG has enough patterns of plays and things like this to be able to cope with an average Kylian Mbappe. If Mbappe is out of the game, if the other team like Real Madrid takes him out of the game by just keeping him quiet, I just don't think PSG have enough then to win a game like this. So right. That's why Real Madrid have to be slight favorite. It will depend a lot on how fit is Benzema, how fit is Ferland Mendy. Mm-hmm. But they have to be slight favorite. And then for PSG, it will rely a lot on Kylian and I guess a little bit on Messi as well.
And what about Neymar? Make a pretty big difference if he was fit as well. Give the opposition something else to think about.
That's right. I'm told that he would be in the squad, but only on the bench. He hasn't played since the end of November or beginning of December. I think it would be too risky, too crazy to start him. I mean, maybe Poch will. What we've seen though when Neymar was not playing is that this PSG team, however, in the last few weeks, to give a bit of positive, they've been far more balanced defensively. They've been much, much stronger defensively than any other time this season in defensive transition, for example, in recovery of the ball. All that has been a bit better than what we've seen between August and mid-November, for example, or even start of December. On that's this progress. I'm just not sure it will be enough. But again, they've got so much talent.
Right.
And, you know, if Verratti is on a good day, Marquinhos, Mbappe, Messi, of course, all of that, Hakimi, they've got enough, more than enough to beat Real Madrid. I just think that over the two legs, Real Madrid have to be slight favourite.
Okay, but it's cup football. And you mentioned some of the names. This is one of the most expensive sides ever assembled. And so many of these players have so much to play for when they come up against Real Madrid, whether it's Messi or Ramos, of course, or former players like Di Maria or Hakimi. Yeah. So many people have so much invested in this game. What's your feeling, Jules? Do you believe?
Yeah, I do believe. And I do believe that these players can step up when it matters. I think these players are players who play for the big games as well. And I'm not saying that Real Madrid don't, but because La Liga is a stronger league than Ligue 1, for example, if you're Messi, and even if you're Marquinhos now, all you look for in your season, not all, but most of what you look for are the Champions League games, especially the knockout stages, maybe the Marseille derbies, the Lyon games, blah, blah, blah. And I think they live for those games. And I would not be surprised if a bit like when we saw against City, for example, in the group stages, James, if that they raise their game up for this Real Madrid clash, and then if they go through for the quarterfinals doing the same. I don't expect to see the same team that the one we see in Ligue 1, because I think they'll be far more up for it than in Ligue 1. After that, yeah, I think they've got enough talent to do it. I think Real Madrid, from what I've seen this season, this is not the level of City or Liverpool, for example, or Bayern Munich yet. But they also have great individual talents. But I still don't think that collectively they're as strong as the three favorite in the competition. So for PSG, this is something they can do. And we've seen those great nights before. This first leg, as I know it's a bit of a cliche, but will be very, very important psychologically. See how the game pans out, if they can be dominant, if they can recover the ball high up on the pitch very quickly again and put more pressure on Real Madrid. I think there's something there. But it's Real Madrid, and it's Carlo Ancelotti also coming back to Paris, of course. It's Karim Benzema coming back to France. So there's a lot of narratives on both sides. But I believe, but I still think Real Madrid will be too strong over the two legs.
I see. Jules, bonne chance, mon ami. We'll catch up with you soon.
Merci, mon ami.
Julien Laurens, eh? Alvaro Romeo. What about Real as they head into this clash? Is it felt in quite such an epic fashion in Madrid as it is in Paris?
I think so. From the very moment that the Champions League hot balls paired up Real Madrid and PSG, I think that everyone is talking about the PSG game. I know that Real Madrid is still involved in domestic duties. In La Liga, they are topping the table. It looks like Sevilla can be a league contender, but that is still to be seen. They are out of the cup, and yes, there is a lot of anticipation for the game against PSG, because it's not only the Mbappé thing, which probably gathers the 80% of the attention. It's also like the Sergio Ramos thing, Lionel Messi coming back to the Santiago Bernabéu in a month time or in 3 weeks' time. So many players have swapped sides and have ended up playing for both sides, like Keylor Navas, Achraf Hakimi, Angel Di Maria as well. But basically, this game offers Real Madrid the opportunity to leave behind the team with some serial Champions League winners in the squad, the likes of Messi, Keylor, Sergio Ramos, and this is very important for Real Madrid because PSG is a Champions League contender, and Real Madrid can also make a statement on the pitch before, presumably, making a statement this summer in the bureau, in the offices, when they sign Kylian Mbappé, or if they bring him at zero cost, if they manage to do it, which seems to be what's going to happen. The thing with Real Madrid this season is that they have only lost one big game. It was against Athletic Club Bilbao in the Cup quarterfinals. But since then, they have ticked all the boxes. They beat Inter twice. They beat Barcelona. They beat Atletico. They beat Sevilla. They won the Super Cup. So they've been doing the job. And I believe that this game against PSG will give Real Madrid the chance to prove themselves against one of the best European clubs. And I think that it's going to be a clash of styles as well, because Real Madrid controls the game a lot. And I think that PSG will rely a lot on the counter-attack, the balls to Messi and then Messi to Mbappé. So that clash is going to be quite fascinating for that reason, I believe.
Okay. Didn't they also lose a game against Sheriff out of Tiraspol?
No, that's true.
All the big games, James. They lose the small games, but the big ones, they're fine.
But they have had one or two issues at this point of the Champions League in recent seasons, exiting in the round of 16 in two of the last three campaigns. And they come into this game with Karim Benzema, an injury doubt. He's missed the last three matches with a hamstring injury. And a recent record, which has seen them only win one of their last four games. That was a 1-0 win at home to Granada. This weekend, for example, they were held 0-0 by Villarreal.
But Gareth Bale's back.
Funnily enough, nobody would have expected Gareth Bale playing, because if he didn't play in the Cup quarterfinals against Athletic Club Bilbao, and Rodrigo and Vinicius started in that game after playing 44 hours before with Brazil, you would have thought Gareth Bale will never play. And Carlo Ancelotti, I think that he amazed everyone just playing Gareth Bale from the start. And the Welshman had a decent game. I think he hit the post as well. And he looked okay, considering that he hadn't played a football game for a few months. But is that enough for Gareth Bale to start against the PSG? I don't think so. They will do their best from the medical point of view to have Karim Benzema on the pitch. Whether he will play 90 minutes or just one half, it's something that we will see. Then Ferland Mendy seems to be back as well. A player who has a ridiculous winning ratio for Real Madrid this season. Pretty much whenever he's on the pitch, Real Madrid wins. Carlo Ancelotti will consider this tire as a 180 minutes tire, especially because the away goal rule doesn't work anymore in the Champions League. Eder Militao having a one-on-one with Kylian Mbappé. And I tell you, from all the defenders of La Liga, if anybody can win a race to Kylian Mbappé, or if anyone can challenge him from the speed point of view, that is Eder Militao.
Carlo Ancelotti, of course, Real Madrid boss, former manager of Paris Saint-Germain. Admit it, Alvaro, you think Real are going to absolutely destroy Paris Saint-Germain. You've seen the Parisians, you've seen them struggle past the likes of Rennes, and you think they're going to come a cropper here.
Well, I'm pretty much watching every PSG game this season because I am a big fan of Messi, and I have been very disappointed with them in many games, and Jules have spoken about it. They won many games, looks like it is effortlessly, but it's basically Mbappé doing everything up front and winning games for them. And also there are some players in PSG that can lose the ball in central areas. For example, Danilo or Kimpembe or Idrissa Gueye. And, you know, I don't think that those players with the ball are Champions League players, with all due respect. I think that defensively they are good, but not with the ball in their feet. And I think that Real Madrid, for that reason, is more balanced. They've got players who have the technique, but also without the ball they play very well. So I think that Real Madrid is the favorite, but PSG has the best players. We have to say that as well, because sometimes the best players win games as well. Mbappé and Messi will play for Real Madrid, and they will be their best players altogether with maybe Vinicius or Benzema. So this is something that has to be taken into account as well. PSG was not better than Manchester City at the Parc des Princes, and yet they beat them because they had Messi, they had Mbappé. So, you know, this can happen, but I still see Real Madrid as the favorite because they've got an idea more consolidated than PSG, and they know what they are playing for.
Okay. Who's got the best players between Barcelona and Napoli, who will be facing off Thursday in a very tasty-looking Europa League tie? It's Barcelona's first appearance in this competition in 18 years, back when it was the UEFA Cup. What do you think, James Horncastle?
I still think Barcelona have got the better players. Don't seem to have a problem spending money recruiting in January, which is something that Napoli didn't do, unless you count Axel Tuanzebe, who came in to cover for Kostas Manolas, who returned to Olympiacos. But
all those players coming back from injury, like new signings, though. Victor Osimhen in particular.
Victor Osimhen, yes. Although he came in for some criticism after the weekend's game. Spalletti saying he often plays as if it's one man against 11, Osimhen against his opponents. Needs to get his head up, needs to, you know, not take two or three strides, because two or three strides for Osimhen are like 10 for his teammates, and they often can't catch up with him. But he is a very interesting player to watch, and I think he was unlucky not to be among the goals in their 1-1 draw with Inter at the weekend, because you saw how he caused problems for Stefan de Vrij and Milan Skriniar. Often de Vrij, where Skriniar had to come over and help his teammate out. So he will occupy Barcelona's centre-backs, make it difficult for them. And then the other thing, Napoli best defence in Serie A, and they were unlucky to concede against Inter. Not really much that Koulibaly and Di Lorenzo could do about Edin Dzeko heading the ball against them and then reacting a little quicker to put it in the roof of the net. But I think one of the reasons why they defend so well isn't just because they've got Kalidou Koulibaly back, of course, from winning the AFCON with Senegal, but also because they've got a very Catalan-Spanish kind of midfield with Lobotka, with Fabian Ruiz in particular. They're very good at playing one-touch football and making their opponents chase shadows. So in that respect, I think it could be a really attractive game for us all to watch.
The weekend game you're referring to there, of course, Napoli's 1-1 draw with Inter, the team who were on top of the table, with Napoli just a point behind them. That draw, though, allowing Milan to slip past the pair of them into top spot, but the trio separated by only 2 points. We'll talk more about the Serie A title race later on, but this game for Napoli, this visit to the new camp. Alvaro, how are Barcelona looking after their 2-2 draw in the derby with Espanyol?
It was a very disappointing result. And if you just take individually what we saw against Espanyol, you will say Barcelona is not ready to win the Europa League, which is the target right now, because they are unlikely to win any trophy this season. And not winning the Europa League will be a little bit of a fiasco for Barcelona, because whatever is not lifting the trophy of the Europa League at the end of the season is going to be considered like a failure in many levels for Barcelona, because they are playing a competition that they haven't played for many years, and they are supposed to be the best team of the competition right now, even though they have to prove it. But yeah, against Espanyol, they show again that whenever they score the first goal, they cannot go for the second, or they cannot make an attempt to go for the second, even though Adama Traoré had a good chance in there to score the 2-0 and probably just put the game to bed. But that didn't happen. And then they allow the Espanyol to have an uprise. And this is something that cannot happen. Top teams don't used to do that. It's like Barcelona didn't know how to stop Raúl de Tomás, who is sensational and scored a beautiful goal. And then Sergi Darder, a player who this week we got to know that he had some mental issues as well, some depression and all that, but he was excellent against Barcelona. So basically there was a team in the Barcelona derby that decided to set the voltage of the game, and they made the game very voltaic. They made the game difficult to play, and Barcelona had to compete in that situation, and they couldn't get a win. So that tells you again that this Barcelona team, whenever it's demanded, highly demanded, then they suffer and they are not ready yet to play a full game at full speed. Then they managed to get a goal in the 96th minute, thanks to Luke de Jong. And yeah, the point is good after all, because Real Madrid didn't win in the weekend, because then Atletico de Madrid is still not on top of them on the table, even though they are leveled on points. So I would say that both Espanyol and Barcelona can be a little bit disappointed with the result, but maybe Barcelona is slightly happier about it, because at least they got a point in the last minute.
Adama Traoré has been pretty good for them in his matches so far.
He's been very good. The plan of Barcelona, and it is very telling that from day number two, because this is the second game of Adama Traoré at Barcelona, the plan was passing the ball to him and let him do something with the ball. That was very impressive, and it's a testament to how good he has to seem to his teammates, that they think that this is the right thing to do. In contrast with Ferran Torres, a player who scored a beautiful goal in Bilbao in the Cup last 16 round, but he played as a false number nine or as a number nine, and he didn't make a difference against Espanyol. I think like it was a bit disappointing from him, but I have to say, yes, Adama Traoré has had a really good impact from the beginning at Barcelona, and I believe that in times of negativity, an optimistic player like Adama Traoré, who is in a way a soloist, well, sometimes he's very well accepted.
Excellent. All right. James was just mentioning how they're still able to make signings, Barcelona, after what was supposed to be a season of extreme penury. Of course, the last week has brought news of this absolutely huge sponsorship deal with music streaming platform Spotify. Does that completely change the prospects for Xavi and the team in one stroke?
No, not completely, not at all, because there is a massive debt, and then they have to comply with the La Liga financial fair play, and then with the UEFA financial fair play. But La Liga one is the first one, and it's not easy for Barcelona to abide it. So I think that this is something that Barcelona needed to do. We spoke like a couple of years ago when the pandemic started about Barcelona probably selling the title rights of the ground to a big brand, even though some at Barcelona opposed. And yes, this is going to help Barcelona tackle the debt. Now, the rumor is that Barcelona is not refusing the contract with CVC, that contract that is going to bring all La Liga clubs some extra money. Now the rumor is that Barcelona may not refuse it completely. So let's see. Every injection of money to the team, coming from whenever Spotify or CVC, will be definitely considered. And let's don't forget that Barcelona will have to keep on offloading players at the end of the season, because this is not sustainable. I mean, in winter they brought many players, some of them will stay, some of them may not stay, but those who stay, like for example Aubameyang, will have a better salary next season than this season. So they have to keep on doing a good job in the market, and they have to keep on offloading players.
Okay, we'll be hearing soon enough about Bayern Munich and their extraordinary defeat this weekend to Bochum, and maybe whether Red Bull Salzburg can pull off a similar trick this midweek. But let's catch up on Inter, the team who only managed to draw last weekend away in Naples, ceding top spot in Serie A in the process, and their chances against Liverpool. What do you think, James? You referenced the fact that last time Liverpool were at San Siro, they looked mighty fine. They were taking on Milan in the group stages this season. They blew past the Rossoneri on their way to becoming the first English side ever to win 6 out of 6 in the group stage. What hope do you think the Nerazzurri have of arresting their extraordinary progress?
Well, Inter and Milan are different teams. They play at the same ground, but I think that's where the commonalities end, because Inter have more experience in Europe than this generation of Milan players. They've been back in the Champions League for, 4 years? They've been to a Europa League final. They've played in big games, not knockout games, but Barcelona, Dortmund, Real Madrid. And often what you hear after those games is Inter played really well for an hour. They dominated for an hour. They could have scored more goals. And they've lost those games, or they certainly haven't won them. And so, this is a test in that regard, to see if they can take that extra step. I think they're realistic about their prospects in it. They haven't been in the round of 16 for more than a decade, despite a lot of investment, despite good coaches being in charge. I think it's going to be tough, because they'll be without Nicolò Barella in the first game, suspended after bit of petulance from him lashing out at Eder Militao in the final group stage game against Real Madrid, which was completely unnecessary given there was nothing riding on that game. Both teams had qualified. And Barella is a player who plays at Liverpool intensity and is their leading assist provider so far this season. I think you can make the case that Dzeko hasn't replaced Lukaku in being Lautaro's partner. Barella has, because a lot of Lautaro's goals have been set up by Barella this season. Dzeko has a bit more of a connection with Dumfries, who's Hakimi's successor. The team has quality, and I think one of the things that stood out in the first half of the season, but particularly in the group stages in both games against Real Madrid, yeah, they have an ability in possession with Brozovic, where they can actually have a foothold in these games. They have pace and dynamism in Barella when he's playing, but also in Perisic and in Dumfries. And they've got a couple of good strikers. And, you know, even if they don't dominate the play, and I don't expect them to against a side as good as Liverpool, the big threat that Inter have is 11 goals from corner kicks this season, 16 headed goals, very good in the air. And sometimes all you need is a moment like that to keep you in a tie like this. So, look, I think Inter's priorities this season, it's to retain the title. It's the closest title race in Europe's top five leagues. It's to get that 20th Scudetto, which would be a second star. But, you know, I think there's a feeling that, you know, when Conte left Juventus, Allegri unexpectedly took Juventus to a final. And Inter are due a good run in the Champions League. Forget about the Europa League final a couple of years ago. Juventus' run under Allegri started with them knocking out a quote-unquote giant of the time, Dortmund, who'd just been to a Champions League final, a club that was coached by Jurgen Klopp. Could it happen this time around with Liverpool? I don't think so, because Liverpool are far better than Dortmund were then. I think that was the Dortmund side that had just sold Lewandowski. And again, James, this is the question whenever Italian sides play English sides, I think with the exception of Juventus under Allegri in his first spell, and maybe Atalanta with Gasperini, is Italian sides have to show that they can keep pace with the intensity with English teams.
Yeah, absolutely. Worryingly for Inter, they've just come through two games regarded as must-win fixtures and managed to get victories in neither of them. The derby a week ago with Milan, and then that visit to Napoli, their other title rivals, this time around. All right. Next up, let's check in on Bayern Munich.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Deutscher Meister, bin ich der VfL. Deutscher Meister, bin ich der VfL. Deutscher Meister, bin ich der VfL. Deutscher Meister, bin ich der VfL.
Indeed. Probably the surprise result of this weekend in Europe was Bayern Munich losing at the team that this song was dedicated to, promoted side Borkum. Who is a Borkum fan? Christoph Biermann, of course. And that was him singing. And he joins us now. Christoph, first of all, nice pipes. So, Christoph, recording as the Sammy Potstein experience, which you have to explain to us, with the Deutsche Meister Venida for FL, was it a hit?
Not actually. It was banned from the club shop. So the board of the club at that time, they had the impression that the song was too critical, saying that Bochum will never be champion ever. Mm. And so they didn't take it to the club shop. And in the end, it was a very independent and, as you heard, very low-fi production. And I think it sold 500 vinyl singles. But okay. But it was on different football song samplers, even in Japan. So I don't know if Sammy Potstein experienced is big in Japan, but at least it was published.
Yeah. All right. Well, no doubt you're thinking about penning a new tune after what happened this weekend as Borkum hosted the mighty Bayern Munich and beat them 4-2. You're a long-time Borkum fan, Christoph. How did Saturday's result rank among the all-time great Borkum games?
There is a famous Bochum fan. He is called VfL Jesus because not because he is a holy man, but because he resembles Jesus in a way. And he said it was the game of the century. And I don't know if he was only referring to this century or even the century before. Of course, it was terrific. And I was under shock. Because Bochum is not the team that is used to beat Bayern. They got good results against big teams or big names in the Bundesliga over the decades, but not against Bayern. And I think one of the reasons is that there is a fan friendship between Bochum and Bayern supporters. It's a long history to that, but my feeling is that maybe that played a part in there. And actually, I was under shock, especially after the first half when Bochum was 4-1 up.
4-1 up. The first time that Bayern have conceded 4 first-half goals in the Bundesliga since the mid-1970s. Bochum, who were only promoted at the start of this season, saw Bayern take the lead, as usual, with that Robert Lewandowski. But then what happened? How did this incredible upset come about?
I think maybe we have to jump back a bit, because on this day today, 2 years ago, the Bundesliga was, professional football was interrupted in Germany because of the pandemic. And as you know, the German football was the first to start. And before this interruption, Bochum was fourth from bottom in the second division. And in a spectacular fashion, they've turned things round. And it was even a surprise that they were promoted to the Bundesliga this season. And there is a much bigger surprise that they are where they are now with 28 points and were able to take the opportunity. Because if you want to win against Bayern, I think the rule for most clubs, apart from probably Dortmund or Leverkusen or maybe even Leipzig, is Bayern has to allow it. Bayern has to take a day off. And they did that this season several times already. Interestingly, going out of the German Cup 5-0 at Mönchengladbach, losing at home to Mönchengladbach again in the league and in Augsburg. So especially against the smaller teams. And But if you look at the table, they are still, in a way, unaffected. 6 points clear of Borussia Dortmund still.
Okay, but it's a huge result for Borkum. How many points are you now above the relegation zone?
It's 10 from direct relegation and 6 from the relegation place. Because I think not everybody knows it, third from the bottom of the Bundesliga at the end of the season plays 2 relegation matches against the third from the second division.
All right, a huge result. Bayern were without Manuel Neuer, their first choice keeper. Not sure though whether he would have saved some of those goals, because there were some fantastic goals from Borkum here. Christian Gamboa, also the Gerrit Holtmann.
Dann Gerrit Holtmann, Tunnel gegen Upamecano. Holtmann, und der sitzt auch. Das ist unfassbar. 4-1, 44. Minute.
He also scored the goal of the season for 2021. That's a very popular competition in German TV where people can vote for the best goal of the month and in the end the best goal of the year. And he scored a goal after terrific dribbling against Mainz. And so he's not the goal scorer, but he takes the nice goals.
Excellent. All right. Well, congratulations then to yourself, Christoph, and Borkum.
Thank you.
A quick word, if we may, on the aforementioned Borussia Dortmund, who did take the opportunity to narrow the gap at the top 2, 6 points by winning 3-0 at Union, who we had been talking up in recent shows as being potential Champions League participants next season. They've dropped to seventh with this defeat, although, my word, is it tight, because the teams from fourth place to seventh in the Bundesliga are all on the same points: Leipzig, Hoffenheim, Freiburg and Union. Dortmund, though, who will be hosting Rangers on Thursday, how's their form looking? How good was Marco Reus as well at the weekend?
Marcus Reus was outstanding. He played in a bit of a different role, and that was a very good decision by coach Marco Rose. He played on the number 10, and he scored two goals from coming from this position. He looked very much in form. I was there yesterday at the Alte Försterei, and Borussia Dortmund was impressive because, as you said, it's not easy to win at Union. That's only the second defeat this season at home. The first one was against Bayern Munich, and it was important because last week we've been talking about them as a problem child of the Bundesliga, and now they looked like not at all like a problem child. They looked like especially a very mature team, how they approached the game, how they played it. They looked good.
Excellent. All right, well, a huge game coming up for them, as I say, on Thursday as they host Rangers. Meantime, Bayern will be in action on the Wednesday away in Austria against RB Salzburg. What do you think about Salzburg? Could they do a Borkum?
If Bayern allows it, yes. I mean, that's if they take another day off, Salzburg has a good chance. But that's not typical for Bayern, and I think it won't happen two times in a row. So okay. I think Salzburg will be faced with a very concentrated and very sharp Bayern team.
Right, 6-2 this game finished last time Bayern visited a Red Bull. That was last season in the group stage. Red Bull coming off as well a two-month break in the Austrian Bundesliga season. Their first game back was Friday night when they were 2-1 winners at Rapid Vienna. Alvaro?
Yeah, very quickly. I would like to ask Christoph, what does he think about Joshua Kimmich playing on his own in midfield? Because the other day didn't work. And, you know, maybe not against Salzburg, even though they press a lot. But in the Champions League, Nagelsmann has to address that. I mean, he has to play someone alongside him because otherwise they are going to suffer a lot. And I know that Goretzka is out, but still, they have to find the solution there.
Yeah, it's a good question that you're bringing up there because he corrected himself in Bochum. Because in the first half, Kimmich was the sole number six, and then Tolisso came on to help him in midfield. And it wasn't enough to turn the game around. But I think it's better for Bayern to play with two players in this position of the field. And Tolisso has proven that he's able to do it in a very good way. So it was a tactical decision to approach this this Bochum match in a different tactical order. But Nagelsmann said it himself that it was a mistake.
Probably bad news for Red Bull Salzburg to be taking on the Bavarian Giants straight after they've had a defeat like this. All right, we'll see what happens on Wednesday. Thank you very much, Mr. Sammy Pockstein Experience, a.k.a. Christoph Biermann. Look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thanks for having me. Cheers, bye.
The other game midweek in the Champions League is Sporting against Man City. Sporting, who finished second in Group C before Christmas, they were behind Ajax, beat Borussia Dortmund to second spot, pushing Dortmund into the Europa League. City, who did actually lose a couple of away games in the group stages at PSG, as mentioned before, and RB Leipzig as well beat them at their place. However, what do you think? Much chance of an upset here?
I think that the Sporting is a very good side. I do believe that. Manchester City, they had strange numbers in the group stage because in the Premier League they have conceded only 14 goals, which is their best ever ratio. in history for Manchester City at this point of the season, having played for 24 games. And in the Champions League, they conceded a lot of games so far because they played also against PSG and against Leipzig. And yet, they came out as first of the group. I did like something that Manchester City did a lot in the weekend, which was like keeping the ball, the possession next to the opponent's box and suddenly sending a ball to the second post. And from there, we saw Manchester City having a lot of chances. So they are adding up new things and new tactical switches to the team pretty much every month. So that is very impressive. But when it comes to Sporting, they are a very good team. And I hope that they had a little bit of yoga on Friday, because after the game against Porto, you know, after the final whistle, there were four players sent off. Do you remember? That was, you know, it was a very tough game for both Porto and Sporting, because Sporting needed to win just to keep realistic chances of winning back-to-back titles in Portugal, and Porto managed to come back from a 2-0 deficit, and they got an equalizer, and the game finished 2-2, and it was a very physical game. I'm sure that they are tired after that, but then they rested one more day than Manchester City. But Sporting Lisbon, they are a funny side, because no player stands out like in Porto before with Luis Díaz, or with Benfica with Darwin Núñez, but they've got a really good core of players. They won the last two Taça da Liga and they lost the last league title in Portugal. And Rubén Amorim, he won the last three Taça da Ligas. 3-4 years ago, he was still pretty much doing an internship, doing his badges and all that. He even attended a course in which Jose Mourinho was one of the speakers, I believe, 4 or 5 years ago. And from the very first moment that he became a professional coach, he's been winning titles, he's been getting his teams better, and I really want to follow the trajectory of Rubén Amorim, because he has created a really solid side.
All right. Well, it's going to be interesting to see how that trajectory fares against Man City, who are not immune from blowing big games, particularly in Europe. Fascinating stuff. Thank you very much for that, Alvaro. In a second, let's get a quick check on some of the other games coming up in the Europa and especially Europa Conference League.
We all enjoy the sport we call the beautiful game.
But since I've retired, I've discovered an ugly, even darker side to the sport we love.
Join me as Jamie Redknapp investigates.
Thanks, Jamie. We'll take it from here. Join Jamie Redknapp for Jamie Investigates, the football mockumentary series. Watch on Paddy Power's Twitter. This week, Jamie investigates people who still call the Premier League the Premiership.
Do you know the truth?
Paddy Power.
18+, begambleaware.org.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Thursday brings the Europa League and Europa Conference League. If you're confused as to which game to follow, Sheriff Braga, perhaps Porto Lazio, possibly Sparta Prague, Partizan Belgrade. The good news is that you can follow all the games at once via the magic that is The Goals Show, which returns for a special Thursday night edition. We're going to be looking, of course, all over Barcelona-Napoli. You'll be handling that one, I imagine, will you, James?
Of course.
Of course. We've got Don Hutch in. Don Hutchison, he's going to be following Dortmund-Rangers. Big opportunity for redemption there, because the last time they met, Rangers got eliminated on penalties. And who missed the crucial spot kick? Oh, my word, it was Giovanni von Bronckhorst. This was back in 1999, but he's now Rangers manager. Huh. What else you got? You got Atalanta against Olympiacos, the Greek mythology derby. Porto Lazio, Sergio Conceição derby. What Thursday night games have you got ringed in red, James Alvaro?
I think the Porto Lazio game, because, you know, I mean, Pepe just got sent off for the first time in 11 years. Yeah, I mean, how's he going to react to that?
After the final
whistle.
Is he going
to be shaken up? Is he going to be shaken up after a 40-man brawl, 100 people on the pitch at the end of that Clásico? But, you know, Porto came back from 2-0 down to get a point in that game. And they are still undefeated in Portugal. And we saw them do pretty well in the games that they needed to do well in the Champions League, which was the ones against Milan. And, you know, Maurizio Sarri was saying, look, after the cup game against Milan in midweek, he asked some of the Milan players, what was it like playing Porto? And I think they told him it was harder than what they just faced than his Lazio team, who they'd just beaten 4-0. But, not to be churlish, Lazio have picked up form of late. You know, not themselves out of the... they're not out of the race for top four. They've been winning a lot of games 3-0, keeping a lot of clean sheets. Immobile scoring. Zaccagni has been a very good signing for them, as has Pedro. And so this could be a very interesting game beyond the obvious Sergio Conceição links.
Excellent. Alvaro, you'll probably have one eye on Sevilla, who've been excellent form, and of course Europa League favourites. They're hosting Dinamo Zagreb. Sevilla, who are still in second place in La Liga. They had a 2-0 win at the weekend to close the gap a little with Real Madrid again to 4 points. Anything else you want to highlight from the Thursday night games?
Definitely. I mean, I think that from the Spanish side, I'm looking forward to seeing Betis, because if any team is entertaining this season in La Liga, it's Real Betis. They are scoring a lot of goals. Fekir, he has been one of the best players in La Liga, and in the weekend he scored the brace. And Betis came second from their group in December. I think that Bayer Leverkusen was better than them that period of the year. But right now, Betis is a great proposition, and I think that Zenit is going to suffer because Betis is playing a really good football. So I'm looking forward to that game. And of course, Leipzig-Real Sociedad is another game that stands out as well.
Yeah. Real Betis away in St. Petersburg. That'll be a huge game. As I mentioned, all the matches, there's an early evening tranche and then a later evening tranche that will all be covered on the BT Goal Show. If you're in a region where that's available, why not tune in? Excellent. One or two other stories to pick up from La Liga and Serie A. We'll do that next.
We're all driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. According to their own survey, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. Remember the last time you were hiring and how slow and overwhelming it was? Well, you don't need to go through all that again. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent. And because you listen to the Totally Football Show, Indeed is going to give you a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/totally. That's Indeed.com/totally. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed at Indeed.com. You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. And with Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. Which will come in handy when Mikel Arteta finally bends the process altogether. Pre-match bet builders only get your stake back as a free bet. Minimum 4 plus legs. Maximum free bet is £10. Other T's and C's apply, and please gamble responsibly.
Palla lunga di Mike Mignon che va a cercare Leao. Grandissimo l'assist di Mike per Rafa. Eccolo lì, Rafa che se ne va. Rafa che se ne va. Gol di Rafael Leao, prepotente e decisivo. Assist di Mignon. Gol di Leao. Tutti ad abbracciare Mike. Fantastico.
All right, James. Milan top of the table. A lot of love for Rafael Leao and for Mike Mignon.
Yeah, two players who combined for the only goal of the game. Mike Mignon being the goalkeeper, signed to replace Gigi Donnarumma in the summer. And what a goalkeeper Milan have got for a very small fee, you know, compared with some of the other top goalkeepers. You think of the money paid for Alisson, Edison. And the distribution that Mignon has, which came to the fore in this goal, because I wouldn't say he hoofed it, but you know, he became the first goalkeeper at Milan to have an assist since Dida against Ascoli a long, long time ago.
77 metres they measured this at.
Yes, using the Boris metrics there, are we?
that's what it said in the paper.
But yeah, first goalkeeper since Dida to get an assist for Milan. Marco Giampaolo, the coach of Sampdoria, was actually the coach of Ascoli that day that Dida did that. So clearly, you know, Milan's long in the tooth scouts have told the goalkeepers to just punt it long, and that's the way to break down Giampaolo teams. But Leao has also gone to another level this season. You know, there was no doubt about his talent. You know, he's got this size, but this kind of wiry elasticity and speed, which has led Stefano Pioli to compare him with Thierry Henry. And yeah, since the turn of the year in particular, he's been unplayable at times. I think that's why you've had this sudden resurgence in Milan's form after they flagged a little towards the end of last year and going into the little mini break that we've just had. And it's been a perfect week. Come back from behind and beat Inter in the derby, knock out Lazio to reach a cup semi-final where they will play Inter for another derby. And then, I mean, they should have scored more goals in this game against Samp and obviously went top of the table. So, yeah, lots of signs of encouragement for Milanisti.
Absolutely. They're 1 point clear of Inter and 2 points clear of Napoli in an ever so exciting title race. Meantime, if they do make it past their upcoming derby at the start of March in the Coppa Italia semi-finals, then they'll be up against the winners of another very intriguing semi-final matchup, which is Juventus with Dusan Vlahovic up against Vlahovic's old club Fiorentina. The first leg in Florence should be, well, tasty. Juve at the weekend involved in a 1-1 draw away at Atalanta. You flagged up Ruslan Malinovsky's goal, but Juve's never-say-die attitude was in evidence once again.
It was. Yeah, they played very well for the first 20 minutes. Very authoritative. Looked like Vlahovic was going to continue on what has been a very good start to his Juventus career. Obviously scored on his debut. And his effort was deflected in for a late winner against Sassuolo in the cup. But yeah, Atalanta, to their credit, made it very difficult for Juventus. I think it was interesting how they paid $75 million for Vlahovic in January, but it was their other $75 million signing who was probably more important, was Matthias De Ligt. De Ligt making a number of key blocks. Atalanta claiming one was with his hand in the penalty area, and it was going to be very difficult for them to break the deadlock, but break it they did in stoppage time with that Dybala corner kick and Danilo rising up to score a header. And they're 11 games unbeaten. I think it's eight or seven clean sheets in that time. Keeps them where they want to be for now this season, which is to still have a chance of getting top four. They are ahead of Atalanta, but Atalanta have a game in hand. And we'll just have to see how this new Juventus with Vlahovic, but also with Zakaria when he comes back, how they evolve, progress and what they can do in the Champions League as well against Villarreal.
Yeah, that'll be coming up in a week's time. Juve, fourth place then. Atalanta, 2 points behind them. And Lazio, only 2 points behind them. Lazio, who we'll be seeing in action on Galazzo Live next Sunday night, if you fancy a bit of that. They're away at Udinese. Very good. To round things off, Alvaro, we talked about the derby in Catalonia. We never really got the background to that quite extraordinary Atletico Madrid 7-goal thriller with Getafe. 3-3 at half time. What's going on with Atleti this year?
It's extraordinary. You know the funny thing, that whenever they are more needed, whenever they look more wounded, is when they bring their best possible version. They did it against Liverpool, I remember, in the Champions League. They couldn't win that game, but they were reduced to 10 men, and they were very competitive against Liverpool. Also, they know how to come back in games as well. The problem is, why does Atletico de Madrid resort to heroics? I mean, why do they have to come back in so many games? Why they have to play so many games reduced to 10 men? These things have to be polished very quickly. They have to be fixed because otherwise they won't go very far away in the Champions League. And against Getafe, a year ago, I was telling you guys about the head-to-head of the Atletico de Madrid against Getafe, which was unprecedented and very weird as well. I think that from 2011, December or November 2011 until mid-2021, Getafe and Atletico played like around 17, 18 games, and Atletico always got the points against Getafe, and Getafe never scored a goal against Atletico de Madrid. And suddenly, in a half, they are scoring 3 goals this time on Saturday evening. I think Getafe, they are a very improved team under Quique Sánchez Flores. That has to be said. Quique has changed the team completely. Quique, by the way, is a manager that should be getting a lot of praise in Madrid, especially, obviously, at Atletico de Madrid. He was also a Real Madrid player, but as an Atletico de Madrid manager, he won the Europa League for Atletico in 2010. You will remember that they beat Roy Hodgson's Fulham. And that was the first title that Atletico got in many years. So that was very important for them, I would say. But back to the game. It was 3-3 after 45 minutes. Atletico missed a penalty. Then they were 2-3 down. They scored the 3-3. And in the second half, Felipe was sent off with a very bad challenge. He raised his leg too much and he hit very strongly Arambarri. Fortunately, Arambarri is fine, but it could have been very, very, very dangerous. And then in the 89th minute, when they were reduced to 10 men and they had played around 25 minutes with 10 men, they managed to score that goal by Mario Hermoso. These are the kind of wins that probably lift the morale in the troops, but at the same time, the same questions linger. I mean, why is Atletico having so much trouble to win the winnable games?
Indeed. And it leaves them level on points with Barcelona, but behind on goal difference.
And one thing, James, about Mateus Cunha, because he scored for Atletico the other day, his ratio is astonishing. Probably nobody was expecting this. He has scored 5 goals in La Liga. He has taken only 8 shots. I think that this is over a 60% conversion rate. So, yeah, the Brazilian is doing very well.
Very nice indeed. Excellent. All right. Just one story we should probably flag up before we leave you, listener. Last week we talked about how Pippo Inzaghi had been ruthlessly fired by Brescia chairman Massimo Cellino. Yes, him. Brescia down in Serie B, the second division in Italy. They were third in the table when Cellino decided it wasn't good enough and that Pippo should do one, promptly contacting Diego Lopez to bring him in instead. That was at the start of the week. However, on Thursday, James, what happened?
Well, there was a meeting with Super Pippo's lawyers, James. And they pointed out that Massimo Cellino had agreed to a clause in Pippo's contract which said, sorry, you can't fire him if my client is in, what, the top 6? And with them being third, Pippo is unfireable. I think he was on the bench at the weekend for the game against Alessandria, which ended in a 1-1 draw. They needed a 90th minute equaliser. Right. They're still fourth, and that means Super Pippo is still unsackable Super Pippo.
Hooray! However, they're only 3 points away from 7th place Frosinone. So, boy, this is going to be quite a tense run-in. Right. We'll keep you abreast of that, listener. It's an important one. Very good. Very good. That's where we'll leave things, though, for this edition of the Totally Football Show, a European version. Many thanks to Alvaro and to James Horncastle and Christoph Biermann and Julien Laurens. Producer Charlie, as ever, putting the whole thing together. And listener, your ears, what would it have been without them? That's a philosophical question, isn't it? If you made a podcast but nobody listened. But anyway, we'll be back with more real-life tales of derring do around the continent next Tuesday. Of course, on Thursday, we'll have reaction to the midweek game. So hopefully you'll join us for that. For now, though, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.